This season of Raised Sports is brought to you in partnership with the Dominic Fouts Memorial Cancer Fund, which is named after my cousin, who died of colon cancer in 2012 at the age of 34. The Dom Fouts Fund does important work providing financial assistance to cancer patients and their families. As you probably know, the cost of cancer treatment is incredibly high, and the burden can lead to financial struggles. So support the Dom Fouts Fund and help families deal with the cost of cancer treatment. For more information on how to do so, go to domfoutsfund.org.
Our personalities are completely different. You know, he's calm. He's kind to everybody no matter what. Definitely not me. But I'm competitive like he is, for sure.
In April of 2020, my father, Tim Harkins, died of cancer. This is a tribute to him. Episode 2, Grace. Anyone who played sports as a kid probably remembers, as I do, the big cheer you'd do at the end of every game. You'd gather into a huddle, everyone puts their hands in the middle, and you cheer, win or lose, for your opponent. 2, 4, 6, 8, who do we appreciate? And then you name the team you just played, and you go shake hands. Now, what happens if the kids get a little full of themselves, and they decide to alter this cheer? If your coach happened to be my grandfather, it was a problem.
We were a pretty good basketball team. And so we didn't lose many games. And we were just a little bit of a cocky bunch because your grandpa had coached a pretty good team.
This is Joe Staley, a childhood friend of my dad's. They played on a lot of teams together growing up, including a sixth grade team for St. Patrick's Catholic School that was coached by my grandfather. This team was a pretty talented bunch. Unfortunately, they knew it.
Several of us, and your dad wasn't one of the instigators, but several of us just say, "Hey, let's do the 2, 4, 6, 9. Better luck next time," you know. I mean, and we were sixth graders, you know. It didn't seem like it was going to be that big a deal, but it turned out to be a pretty big deal.
My Uncle Vern, one year younger than my dad, remembers the incident and how Grandpa reacted very well.
My dad just got pissed. I mean, to him, that violated good sportsmanship and all of this stuff. And he got angry and he called them together and he said, "You know, I'm really upset with what you guys have done. And, you know, because of it, I'm resigning as your coach. I'm not going to coach anymore."
We all had our tails between our legs as we left the gym. You know, and then we were trying to, what do we do now? We got squashed. Mr. Harkins, we always called him Mr. Harkins, you know. He squished us pretty good.
And so then they had their own little team meeting, I guess, in the aftermath. And they wrote up an apology and a card, and they all signed it and gave it to him and hoped that he would come back and coach, and he did.
He came back and coached us, but we all learned there isn't any of us that don't remember that. You know, good sportsmanship. You know, once a game is over, it's over. You don't rub it in someone's face and that.
Grandpa quit, at least momentarily, as a matter of principle, to prove a point. Kind of like my dad did when he quit his high school basketball team. The difference between my dad and my grandpa, though, is that bullheadedness, as we talked about in episode 1, was rare with Dad. While Grandpa was often inflexible, Dad was not. He learned and he grew. He was able to self-reflect, take a measured approach to examine a situation from all sides. My dad had patience. He had grace. Episode 1 was all about Dad's determination, his competitiveness. And that is a quality he definitely had, a quality he instilled in all of us to some degree. Here is my sister, Katie.
I definitely would say a strong trait of his that I have is that being competitive and wanting to push yourself. Our personalities are completely different. He's calm. He's kind to everybody, no matter what. Definitely not me. But I'm competitive like he is, for sure.
Now, to be honest, I didn't know what to call this episode at first. I thought about calmness, which Katie touched on here. Then I thought the quality I wanted to focus on was kindness. Then I thought about some other characteristics that were related to these. He was non-judgmental. He was likable. He was, at his essence, simply good. That's how I ended up with Grace. Not in the physical sense. When it came to sports, Dad was much more of a bull than he was a deer. But in the sense of demeanor, he usually handled himself with a disposition toward kindness, understanding, compassion, and thoughtfulness. Or, in summary, grace. And it was no different when he came home from the hospital this spring. It was Wednesday, April 8th, when Dad came home. A worker brought a hospital bed and set it up in his bedroom near the window, with a beautiful view of the southern edge of Spokane. A nurse came to show us the ropes of home hospice care, how to navigate the amazing collection of medications, give him this for nausea, this for constipation, and this for pain, how to operate the morphine drip and to give him an extra bump when he needed it, how to arrange the bed and the pillows to move him every so often so he didn't get bed sores, and so many other things you would never imagine go into it until it's staring you in the face. The nurse would come twice a week to check in, and aid weekly to give Dad a bath, and we could call whenever we needed something, but for the most part, we were on our own. And honestly, that was fine with us. This is the way we wanted it, us with him. We knew we could handle it, strength in numbers, and we wanted all the time with Dad that we could get. Pretty soon after Dad came home, the well-wishers started coming. The ringing telephone provided a consistent soundtrack in the house. Close friends who lived nearby would come wearing masks and bearing gifts. They'd come alone or in groups of two or three, eager to spend some time by the bed sharing stories to say goodbye. Father Mike, our family friend and the Catholic priest we grew up with as kids, he came by for a visit too, to talk to Dad and to administer the sacrament of the sick. We also started working on getting each of Dad's seven siblings a chance to talk to him on FaceTime. We started with Kathleen, Dad's older sister, and worked our way through the list from oldest to youngest. Vern, Mary, Cecilia, Joe, Shannon, and Kelly. These calls could be entertaining and funny. They could be touching and sad. Sometimes Dad just didn't seem able to really engage or even comprehend what was going on, probably due to the medications. Sometimes he was just really tired and needed to rest. But when he was alert, you could tell there was an effort on his part to handle these calls with a sense of normalcy and composure. Or maybe it didn't really require effort on his part at all. Maybe it was just his personality. I remember when Uncle Vern called, there was this immediate, good-natured, brotherly banter. Vern said, "I'm still faster than you, Timmy." Dad replied that Vern had no talent. There was a lot of reminiscing, including a story I'd never heard before about Dad's apparent love for, of all things, fruit cocktail. The story involved Dad as a kid raiding the fruit room in the basement. This was where Grandma kept her supply of store-bought canned goods, as well as an assortment of fruits that she had canned herself. My Aunt Kathleen tells the story.
And he'd bring them upstairs so that he could eat without Mom and Dad seeing that he was eating, and he would usually do it in my bedroom where he could throw the can out the window into the Carter's vegetable garden. And there were berry bushes, as I recall, right below the window. He would throw them down there. And I don't know if his thought process was, I'll go down and get those cans in the morning and throw them in the garbage so nobody will ever know, or nobody's ever going to find them down there. But Mr. Carter eventually did find them and I think pointed them out to my father. And so I brought an end to sneaking cans of fruit out of the fruit room.
So Kathleen was among the people giving Dad a hard time about this story during one of the FaceTime calls. And Dad, while he wasn't quite himself, you can still hear him on the call slip so easily into that sibling banter that was so common.
I hear you like fruit cocktail.
Oh, yeah. Geez.
You know where that started?
No.
When you used to sneak the cans out of the fruit room?
Never
go up
did
in the bedroom
never,
and eat them and throw them into Carter's yard?
Never did it. Never touched the can. Never did
you
it.
Lie.
Never did. Yeah, you make up stories. Can't believe it.
There are some things I can remember from our young days, and that's one of them.
I love hearing old stories about Dad from his childhood, and one common thread that kept popping up in many of the tales is how he tended to handle things so calmly. He had a way of analyzing a situation and figuring out the best course of action. Not that he couldn't be silly or get into mischief. He certainly did that a lot. But he recognized limits. One of my favorite examples of this involved Uncle Vern and a run-in with one of the toughest kids in the neighborhood, a kid named Denny Brennan.
Denny Brennan was known as a brawler. You know, guys from other schools would come up to look for Brennan to fight him.
So one time, Vern says they were 11 or 12 years old, and a bunch of kids had gathered at Jefferson Park for a pickup baseball game. Vern often tagged along with Tim, my dad, his big brother, whose friends were two grades ahead of Vern in school. And when they would pick teams, Vern, who is the younger guy, would typically be the last player chosen. The team captains would decide who got Little Harkins. So this one time, Denny Brennan was there, and as the game unfolded, he started picking on Vern verbally, being a bit of a bully.
You know, he was just really teasing me hard, you know, giving me a raft of shit. And I had a bit of a temper back in those days. And so I was kind of getting to the point where I'm just getting really tired of this, you know. And so at a certain point, something was said, and I started to go towards him.
And Dad was watching this, and when he saw what was about to happen, he stepped in, saving his little brother from more than just a little bit of teasing.
Your dad steps in front and says, "This would not be a good idea."
Another story was told by Joe Staley, and it fits in well with this whole not a good idea concept. Joe says that they were in high school at Bellarmine Prep, and somebody came up with an idea that might have seemed fun in the moment, but really wasn't that well thought out.
One night we went down, we were going to jump a train and take it up to Seattle, go down to Tacoma, down in the train yards. We went down there, and we just, you know, it was a dumb thing, but we said, let's get on the train, see where it takes us.
They barely knew what direction Seattle was, let alone which freight train would take them there. But they picked one out, and they hopped in a train car. Well, not all of them did.
We got in one of those box cars, and we were there. Your dad was standing on the side, and he says, "Hey, you guys, get down here. We're not doing this." And we all got off. We obeyed him. And that wasn't usually who he was. He usually wasn't like that. But, I remember that very distinctly, looking down and him looking up and saying, "Guys, get down here. We're not doing this, you know." And so we all jumped down and thought, you know, one of us has some good sense.
There is one more story I want to share that fits in with all of this. And this is one that I witnessed personally. It came during Hoopfest, which is this huge 3-on-3 basketball tournament that is held in Spokane every year.
Well, Hoopfest, officially 109 days away, but the time to register is now for the world's largest 3-on-3 outdoor basketball tournament.
Yeah, more than 24,000 players are expected to sign up this year, so no matter what your age or your skill level, there's a division for you.
It's this massive thing. Spokane loves big community events like this, and it really is cool. They block off the whole downtown area and play in the streets. I played in it many times myself, so did my brother and many of my cousins. So one year, the family is there and we're watching my brother Paul play. And he's playing against a kid who, well, here's how Paul describes him.
This guy, from what I remember, he was, I feel like he was just the epitome of everybody's favorite hated player in HoopFest. The guy who calls BS fouls, the guy who complains about everything, and then the guy who gets in your face and complains when you call a foul when he hammers on you.
At one point, Paul drives to the basket, and this kid sticks his knee out and basically just takes Paul down to the pavement.
I went down, like took my legs out from underneath me, and I got up ready to kill him.
So Paul gets up, mad, wants to fight this kid. And I remember people reacting. It was tense. Somebody holds my brother back. They separate the two players. Paul goes to the free throw line, and the other team takes this kid out of the game. And he comes over and sits down on the curb right in front of us. And Dad walks over to this kid.
And then Dad went and sat down next to him.
And I remember thinking, oh no, what's going to happen here? And I'm watching things very closely to see if they escalate. And this kid, who's still upset, he turns to Dad, very confrontational, and he says, "What's up, homie?" And Dad says,
Dad goes, "What's a homie?"
And that was it. I don't know how Dad knew to say, "What's a homie?" But talk about taking the starch out of this kid. The whole thing instantly de-escalated. This was a skill Dad had. He could call somebody out without making the situation worse.
That's the thing. It's like people don't totally expect that type of confrontation. And Dad wasn't afraid to confront somebody. Even if, you know, he wouldn't do it like in a jerky way or anything, but he wasn't going to let anybody get away with something like that if he knew what was going on, you know?
I call this grace. Back to Spokane in the spring of 2020. Dad was home. He was in and out, sometimes really alert and talkative, sometimes less so. But there were some really amazing moments in those first few days. Sometimes his room was filled with us, sitting by the bed or wandering in and out of the room, seeing if anything needed to be done, having conversations, providing background noise. Other times it was quiet, and one of us could sit beside Dad and just talk to him. At night, us kids, as well as Katie's husband, Jesse, took turns sitting up with Dad with the hope that Mom could get some rest. We'd monitor Dad and make sure he was okay, mostly just watch him sleep. We'd do 2-hour shifts and then hand it over to the next person. Meanwhile, we kept arranging video calls with Dad's brothers and sisters, making sure they got a chance to spend some time with him and to say goodbye. Plenty of stories were shared, humorous tales of fruit cocktail and beyond. And of course, there were a lot of tears. The presence of COVID-19 made it unwise for any of them to travel to see Dad in person. And I know that this hurt them. For some, video calls just weren't enough, though, even during a pandemic. Dad's youngest sister, Shannon, drove over from Seattle, 4.5 hours away. She went out on the deck to wave to him through the glass, but Dad coaxed her inside. So she came in wearing a mask. They talked for a few minutes, and then she got back in the car and drove all the way home. There were moments during this period where Dad nearly seemed like his old self. In those moments, it could be easy to forget that neither the cancer nor his infection were being treated. It could be easy to forget that he was dying. One of those nights, Dad wanted something sweet to drink, root beer or Dr. Pepper, and somebody gave him some, and he just sucked it down. And that night, he was very alert. He was talkative and engaging. People were milling about the room, and the mood was good. And then there was this moment where I looked and I saw that while there were a lot of people around, nobody was by the bed. So I went and sat down by Dad, and we just talked for a while. And I told him how my wife, Michelle, and our kids sent their love. They were thinking about him, and they wished they could have been there. But because of work and school or whatever, they just couldn't. And Dad lifted his hand and he gestured at my phone and he said, "Well, where are they?" as if to tell me to stop making excuses and just call them already. And so I made a video call, and luckily they answered. And Dad got to see them all, and they got to see him. And they talked a little bit, and he and my kids made silly faces at each other. And it was beautiful. And this was Dad. Here he was in this difficult, horrifying time, and even then, he didn't make it about himself. He made it about all of us. And I realized that this was why the phone had been ringing off the hook, and why his kids had come from across the country, and why his friends paraded to the house, and why his sister drove 4.5 hours for a 10-minute conversation. Katie sums it up.
It just wasn't a thought, because I think ultimately he fostered such good relationships with each of us and our families that there is no hesitation to be there for him. And I think I could probably speak for all of us when I say we regret that we didn't have more time with him throughout the years. I'm not saying once we knew he was dying. I'm just saying in general, you know, hindsight is 20/20. You just look back and go, damn, I wish we saw him 10 times a year. Or I wish those times that I saw him, we didn't laugh when he rambled on a story, because that's, you know, what Dad did. So I think it's important, you know, everyone wanted to be there. He was such a good guy. It wasn't even just me. All his friends wanted to call. All his friends wanted to see him. I mean, everybody liked him.
This episode was written and produced by me, Bob Harkins. Special thanks to Katie Hancock, Joe Staley, Vern Harkins, Kathleen Keeney, and Paul Harkins for taking part in this episode. And also to my mom, Patty Harkins, for everything. The theme song comes from Corbin Kites, and other music is from Esther Abrami, Steve Adams, and Kwan. The Hoopfest news clip is from KHQ Channel 6 in Spokane. This season of Raised Sports comes to you in partnership with the Dominic Fouts Cancer Fund. For more information, go to domfoutsfund.org. Raised Sports is a proud member of the Story Hanger Podcast Network.